Hey, everybody, it's Rick. And if you're enjoying the Vertafore Insurance podcast, you should definitely check out Accelerate, powered by NetView. This is our huge InsurTech conference happening in April of 2020. And it is the event to attend for everything from networking, thought leadership, learning how to grow your agency, meeting new technology partners, and much, much more. Accelerate is happening in Minneapolis from April 29th through May 2nd. And you can learn more at www.netviewaccelerate.com. That's all one word, netviewaccelerate.com.
Welcome to the Vertafore Insurance Podcast with Rick Fox. We're here to talk about the industry with some of its biggest influencers. From technology, trends, and current events, if it's happening in insurance, you'll hear about it here. Make sure to tune in every week and join in on the conversation with us on social media at Vertafore. And now, here's Rick Fox.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Vertafore Insurance Podcast, the VIP. I'm the host, Rick Fox, and today's guest is somebody that I'm just so glad to have on. This guy has been doing this insurance thing for a long time and has broken through into another level, into another stratosphere. It's my man, Steve Anderson. He is a best-selling USA Today and Wall Street Journal author. I count him as a friend. Him and I have worked together on projects over the last few years when I was with my old company. He's always very, very gracious with his time. And I'm glad to have him. We're going to talk about some things today that I think will help everyone listening. Steve, thanks for being on the program.
Rick, what a pleasure to be on it with you. Thanks for having me.
It's great. I mean, I remember back to the days when you and I were doing those live webinars, and your information is always spot on, but you've taken it to a new level. If anyone out there is looking for a book in general or a good gift to give to someone, I would highly recommend The Bezos Letters, 14 Principles to Grow Your Business Like Amazon. I'm holding the book right now. I'm looking at it. I started reading it. Let me back up and say the irony here is the book about the letters that the founder of Amazon wrote. I went and bought the book on Amazon. So I thought that was kind of funny. and what's great about that and what proves the point of how great Amazon is, I literally 5 o'clock at night, buy. Next day at noon, sitting on my porch. I mean, just an amazing business model that Amazon created. And why I think this is such a cool thing that Steve has done. So basically what he's done is he's taken all of the information that Jeff Bezos writes a letter to all of his investors and stockholders every year. Or is it every year, Steve?
Yeah, every year. Letter to shareholders. It's similar to Warren Buffett, for example, yeah, who has done that for about 40 years now. But Bezos has done it for 21 years.
And so what Steve did was he went back and took all of those letters. And for guys like me that can't pay attention long enough to read all the letters, he turned that into a format that was digestible, hard-hitting, and just completely information filled in this book called The Bezos Letter. So Steve, again, thanks for being here. I want to kind of talk about the book. I want to jump right in. I mean, I think everyone in the industry knows who you are. They kind of know your journey. And the reason I want to use the book as sort of the reference for this conversation is if you're listening in from any industry, although most of our listeners, other than my mom, who listens to the show, are from the insurance industry. This book goes to any industry. You could read this business book and help your business in any area. But where I really want Steve to kind of focus in on what he's written and what the teachings are is how that's specific to the insurance business. So I think we start, and I think chapter one to me, which is called Encourage Successful Failure, I think that really speaks to this risk industry and risk averse people in the industry. Steve, talk to me about where people can really, you know, what they can glean from this chapter or just moving forward in their world that makes this kind of very powerful.
Sure. Encourage Successful Failure really came out of a multi-year now, 4 or 5 year thought process that I have been going through, certainly watching as technology continues to be developed so rapidly. Our industry is, you know, working hard. Vertafore is working hard with their clients. Carriers are working hard to incorporate technology into what we do and how we integrate that and serve our customers. And I came to the realization that the biggest risk businesses face today, and I think certainly the insurance business, is actually not taking enough risk. And it was so counterintuitive. I've been, as you mentioned, my entire career has been in the insurance industry, where we've done everything to reduce risk, mitigate risk, transfer risk to a policy, insurance policy. Yet in today's world, with things changing so rapidly, that can be as detrimental as not taking any risk. So the idea of Encourage Successful Failure is that, and this really comes out of Bezos. I mean, I really, because the book really came out of my research into companies that had grown successfully and companies that hadn't. I mean, we've got lots of examples between BlackBerry and Blockbuster and Kodak and Sears and, you know, lots of examples of companies who have not made that transition successfully. And we certainly have some that have. And I came across Amazon, and known as a inventive and innovative company. And I started looking at why. And that's where I came across the letters. And what shocked me was that Bezos laid out what I call hidden in plain sight, because they're public, they're out there. Anybody could take the letters and read them. His plan for growing Amazon. And one of the biggest areas was how he used risk-taking strategically at Amazon. In fact, he still does. I mean, there we could go on for a long time about examples there. But this idea of you, if you experiment, and these are words that he uses in his letters, you have to experiment to know what you need to do next. And I love this phrase that I would love the industry to grab a hold of: invent on behalf of the customer. That's what Amazon does. And it's not waiting for what the customer says they want. It's looking at everything that you do and inventing on their behalf. Well, that requires experimentation. And Bezos says, if you know the outcome is going to be positive, it's not an experiment. You have to be able to embrace failing, but you also have to do it strategically and thoughtfully. And he uses a phrase in one of the letters where he talks about, I can't think of the exact word I want to use that he uses there, but it's such a great phrase, unthoughtful risk avoidance. And that's not what Amazon does. And so this whole idea is you build a culture where you expect people to experiment and know they're going to fail. Now, I have to say in this same breath, Amazon has an intolerance for incompetence. So this is not just do anything, throw it against the wall, let's see what sticks. It's intentional, it's thoughtful, it's strategic, but it is not guaranteed to work. And you see all the time now where Amazon shuts something down because it didn't work as well or the way they thought it would work, a service, a product, or something. You see that all the time. And that's part of this mindset.
Well, and if you look at it from like, let's compare that directly to our industry, and let's take an agency for perspective here. An agency, like, I'm certain someone's out there going, okay, Rick and Steve are talking about Amazon. I'm a three-man shop in rural Minnesota. How does that relate to me? Well, it's obviously not on the same scale, but it is the exact same relatability, because you've got to try something and be okay that it might not work, and then see it all the way through, whatever that might be. Is it changing a management system? Is it adding a new producer? Is it deciding how you're going to market? Whatever it is, you have to be ready And to your point, like the thing I can't stand is the fixed mindset that goes around, well, I'm not going to try it if it's not going to work. And that to me is how you, that's how you fall behind in whatever business you're in. But again, this being an insurance podcast, I think that is sound advice. And Steve, you broke the book up. So again, the word that came to mind when I started looking through it, and by the way, man, the list of rock stars that you have that wrote endorsements for you at the beginning is ridiculous, including our own Amy Zupon, including my CEO, which is awesome.
Absolutely appreciate her being willing to do that.
And then Michael Hyatt writing the foreword. I mean, it's just an unbelievable cast of people that know what you're doing is brilliant. And what you did, which again, the word I keep using is digestible, because there's plenty of us out there, so many people in this industry that are, you know, producers or salespeople that have the attention span of a gnat, right?
Right.
So I can't go and read all of those letters and digest it and formulate it the way that you've done it. And you've broken it out into these really cool cycles, so growth cycles. So it's test, build, accelerate, and then scale. So in test is where we really talk about that successful failure, encouraging that successful failure. I want to jump to the next grouping, which is build. And I think this is for everyone. And Amazon may be better than anyone, except the only one I can think of that's maybe comparable is Nordstrom in the retail world. Mm-hmm. But it's chapter 4 is entitled Obsess Over Customers. We have to do that in this industry. Talk to me about how specifically you can relate what's in your book to our industry.
Yeah, so comment on the four cycles. So the 14 principles are broken, as you said, into those four cycles. And every business, I don't care what size, is always going through those cycles. You could have a larger right. business, have yeah. different departments going through them. And every principle is not necessarily going to resonate with every business owner right away, but all of them over time should. So the obsess over customers, this is something that just so captured my attention, because I've been involved in work groups where we talk about the customer journey. I've taught people about creating a customer experience, right? We have all these words that we use around our customers, customer service, customer focus, customer journey, you know, customer experience. Bezos, starting in his very first letter, 1997, said, "Our success will be based on how we obsess over customers." Now, think about that word, obsessive, obsess. You know, it has some negative connotations. You're too focused, right? You're tunnel vision just on one thing. And in Amazon's case, for 25 years now, that focus has been on the customer. And as I said, inventing on behalf of the customer, having a culture that always is looking at changing and experimenting and innovating and inventing
yeah.
to make the customer experience better. And so I think there's some really very direct correlation. As an agency owner, are you really obsessed with your customers?
That's such a great point.
And I would say my experience, even my own personal experience with agents that I deal with, no, they're not. And what would it mean to think that way? And here's a simple thing. And I've actually used this example for a long time. Get a friend, somebody your staff doesn't know to actually go and ask for a quote on their insurance. What happens? Mm-hmm. What's the follow through? What's the follow up? Let's say I don't buy now. Have you stayed in touch with me? A year ago, I've shopped my homeowner's insurance for the first time in probably 10 or 12 years. And okay experience during the process. I didn't buy. I've never heard from that agency again. And they're specialized online, right? Well, now the question is, where's the breakdown? Is it in procedure? Is it in process? Is it just mindset? Do they not have the tools in place to send me an email touch every quarter just to, hey, I know your, you know, insurance is coming up again. I know we didn't do it, you know, we didn't get it last time, but we'd love another opportunity. We are not obsessive over our customers. And I think people can certainly agree Amazon is more so. And that's some of the expectations that are being built into our customers that we're having to react to.
Yes.
Right? And so, yes, I know some of you were thinking, it's not as simple as, you know, buying a book or buying a pair of jeans or buying something on Amazon. Insurance is much more complicated, but our interaction isn't more complicated. And in fact, one of the principles is make complexity simple. And that's what Amazon does over and over and over again. I think there's a lot we can do to make the complexity of insurance more simple. And I have to say, so this is a real soapbox. So I'm getting on it.
Yeah,
I'm warning everybody.
Steve, get on it. Get on it.
I am astounded at how few agencies have a client portal.
Isn't it crazy?
I'm astounded. Oh, our clients don't want it. Oh, I don't like it. Well, who cares what you like if you're obsessing over your customers? Here's what Bezos says about self-service. He says, and in fact, Amazon is all about self-service, because if an Amazon customer has to contact them because it's a problem, it's a failure. It's a failure. I can't think of an agent that would look at customer service as a failure. They wait for the phone to ring or have an email coming, as opposed to what's the problem? Is there a way we can solve it? Bezos talks about the gatekeeper, right? And he says, when you have gatekeepers, you stifle invention. Because some crazy idea that somebody wants to try in a self-service mode actually just might work someday. And again, a very different mindset there when we talk about engaging and interacting with our customers.
Well, and what's so crazy about it, Steve, to your point of, I 100%, like as soon as you said Amazon obsesses over their customers, I nodded my head. I'm like, yeah, they do. And they want me to keep coming back. Here's the difference. For me, the difference between the insurance industry and Amazon or any, you know, you fill in the blank name, is we've already got a customer that needs to buy his or renew what he's already giving you. Amazon's hoping I just go buy more things.
Right.
We've got the customer. Right. And if we do right by them, if we obsess over that, they're going to just continue to give you money day after day, year after year, because you've built a relationship. I think obsessing over customers, like to your point, having your friend go do, you know, do a quote. Mine is, have you talked to your customers? Have you asked them what they want? Because I guarantee you, if you went out and talked to 100 of your customers, you would get a much different answer in your mind than, no, they don't want a client portal. Yeah, they do. Ask them, right?
I can't think of a person I know that doesn't want to pay their bill online.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't think of a person that I know that wouldn't want access to certain documents online. And I think the phrase that probably gets me the most upset is, well, we've never done it that way.
Yeah, that's the one that gets me is the one when I'll ask an agency, what is your differentiator? And they say, it's our service.
Yeah.
And I say, tell me about that. When they call, we pick up the phone.
Right. Right. So it's a pretty low bar there.
Yeah, it is exactly right. So I think that is spot on. I think you've dissected the workings of a very, very smart businessman. And if I did nothing but read chapter 4, I think my business is going to see an immeasurable uptick in success. That's like, if I did nothing else but that, I'm winning.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, Rick, let me say this. You know, I know there are a lot of people that don't like Amazon. They've gotten too big, or, you know, a lot of those kinds of things. And I ask in the book, actually, for you to set that aside, because it's hard to argue against their success. And aren't there some things you might be able to learn from what Bezos has done to grow Amazon to where it is today? And there, here's an indicator of success, not just money success. Wall Street Journal and the Drucker Institute, so named after Peter Drucker, for the last 3 years has created a list of the top 250 best managed companies. In 2017, Amazon was number one. 2018, they were number two, and the 2019 just came out, and they're at number one again.
Wow.
35 different measures of excellence, and Amazon's at the top. Well, those are indicators that they're doing something right. Yeah. And again, they're big, so they have all kinds of problems, and I believe they're working through those. But I would ask you to set those aside and actually, are there some things you can learn that helps you compete in this new world?
Well, and I think that you make a great point. Like when I look at, I love Amazon. You know, what's scary is how much my wife loves Amazon, because I literally feel like there's a box on my porch every day. But take anything aside, if it's taking away from local business or all of the things that might be the big bad monster, you know, and to your point, it's just a business, and it's a business that has grown, whatever the word above exponentially is, that's how fast but successfully they've grown. So take that back to your world, as someone who owns a business or works in a business. Like some of these principles, you don't have to be an agency owner to obsess over customers, right?
Yeah,
you
right.
should do that at the producer level, at the CSR level, especially if you have people that report to you, have an expectation that you are leading them and managing them. That is a principle that should be instilled in them from you at all moments, all the time. I just think it's such a crucial step. We did this. I did a podcast back at Halloween where it was about planning for 2020. And if people start, just, you don't have to do everything, but start getting little pieces like what we're talking about. So I want to go to another one. Okay. So the third growth cycle here is accelerate. And chapter seven, principle seven is generate high velocity decisions. I haven't gotten there yet in the book, but I'm very intrigued by those are cool words and they sound really good together. Tell me what they mean.
So Bezos talks quite a bit about decision making through the years. And I think it was 2016 letter, he really goes a deeper dive into decision making at Amazon. And he puts decision making in two types, type one and type two, very creative. Type one decisions are decisions that are, you know, bet the farm. They're big decisions. They could completely change the course of a company. He said those types of decisions should be made slowly, with lots of data and lots of discussion. He said type two decisions are decisions that, his words, we can walk through that door, make that decision, and if we don't like what we see on the other side, we can turn around and walk back through the door. Meaning type two decisions are easily reversible. And so the problem, he says, is as a company gets bigger, they tend to make decisions more like type one than type two.
Interesting.
And when you do that, you slow down. You slow down growth, you slow down invention and innovation, you slow down
creativity,
the progress that a company can make. And so at Amazon, there is a default to action, and they have a really interesting tool that I think is a game changer. It certainly has been for Amazon. It's called the 6-page memo. And so when a meeting is called, somebody calls a meeting, and let's say there's a new product they want to pitch and they want to get resources to develop this and put it out, you know, for customers. The person calling, or the group calling the meeting, is required to write a maximum of 6-page memo. It's that memo starts out with a future press release, the press release that will go out the day the product is available to customers. What's the advantage to customers? What are the, how is it going to work? What are all of the things that that we see ahead? What do we need to develop? That memo is not sent out before the meeting. It is handed out at the meeting, and the first 10 to 20 minutes, longer for more bigger decisions, probably shorter for smaller ones, is spent with every member in that meeting reading the memo. And wow. Then they start asking questions, because they literally are on the same page at the meeting. So the meeting becomes quicker, and it's this idea of slowing down to speed up. And so very intentional on their decision-making part. Now, here's the other benefit. Afterwards, remember we said experiments can fail? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If it didn't work out the way they thought, they now have a document that they created going, here's what we thought would happen. Here's what actually happened. What didn't we understand well enough? Or what can we learn from this that we can apply to future decisions? So they're always iterating and learning and experimenting and testing and learning and applying that into future decisions.
And if you look at it from the perspective, again, just to tie it back to our agencies or anyone in an agency, you've got this same, conceptually, it's what might that be? Are we looking at a new technology? Here, someone's done the research, bring it into the meeting with decision makers. Let's figure that out. Are we looking at expanding through acquisition? Are we looking at finding a new niche that we want to own from a marketing perspective? Whatever that might be in your agency, getting that, and maybe the Amazon approach does work for you, maybe it doesn't, but come up with an approach and then stick to it and then get to work on it, right? I mean, isn't right. that kind of the antithesis here is do it.
Do it. Yeah. Default to taking action.
Yeah.
Because you can move forward and say, you know what? That didn't work the way I thought it was going to work. Let's change. Let's pivot. Let's do this. Let's do that. But without movement, you cannot make those choices.
Well, and to this kind of goes hand in hand with the first point. And now the third point is what I get, and tell me if you're hearing the same thing out there, but you talk to someone who says, yeah, we tried it. It didn't work. So we're going back to the old way. It's like, it's okay that it didn't work, right? And
right.
But you made it to your point. We look at the memo or however you set it up in your world out there, listeners. And then we go back and we look at it and maybe we make some adjustments or we change something or one of the things we thought would happen that didn't come through, this is why. So we pivot there. I just think there's so much value in that, that I think I'm a big fan. I think you've done an amazing job of articulating ways for people to take little piece of the mind of one of the best businessmen that we have in our country and make it digestible for people to use in their daily work. And I'm very appreciative that we're able to talk about this.
Well, thank you.
So, all right, one more. Let's do one from your fourth cycle, which is scale. Again, I love that you said that any business could be in any number of these in different departments at any time. And so what I want to go to here in the scale one is chapter 14, that is, believe it's always day one. That to me, this might be that as much as I loved everything else, this one to me feels almost like the this is where you start.
Yeah, and actually we debated about where to put this.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Frankly, it really is a focus on, as your company grows, how do you keep the vitality of that first day you walked in and opened the doors? And how does Amazon, now with over 700,000 employees worldwide, how do they keep that culture? Well, lots of reasons there, but let me first talk about, what is believe it's always day one. This is a phrase Bezos has used from the very beginning, very first letter. And the closing of every letter since, so all 21 letters, he has some version of, first, as always, and I'm quoting now out of the 2015 letter, as always, I attach a copy of our original 1997 letter. All right, that's a whole conversation there. He attached the original, the very first letter, and has attached it to every single letter since. As the foundational, here's what we said we were going to do. 21 years later, we're still doing it, which I just as a whole, it's just really fascinating to me. And he then says, our approach remains the same, and it's still day one. So what does day one mean? Well, in the 2016 letter, he actually writes about what day one means. And he starts out with this line, Jeff, what does day two look like? And kind of this was at an all hands meeting, employee, and they're asking him questions. And it's like, explain day one. So we know you talk about that, but what's day two? Here's what he says. Day two is stasis, followed by irrelevance, followed by excruciating, painful decline, followed by death. And that is why it's always day one. And then he goes on to say, to be sure, this kind of decline would happen in extreme slow motion. An established company might harvest day two for decades, but the final result would still come. And that's why it's always day one for Amazon. That's part of how you sustain culture as you grow, right? How do you sustain that experimental mindset? How do you sustain invention? How do you sustain the culture that keeps that going? And for Bezos, that's really a key concept. And I think certainly in our industry, so I'm getting questions around, what do I think of insurance companies and what about the industry and where we're going to be in, 5 or 10 years? Yeah. And it's hard to bet against a 200 plus 300 year old industry.
Right.
People are still going to need insurance. No question about that. But how they're going to get it and how they're going to interact with it is always evolving. I mean, there were, when I first started, we had multi-peril policy. So there has been, invention along the way of different coverage types. We never even heard of cyber liability coverage. But we need to accelerate that. And some of that's being pushed by the third party, startup companies that are coming in the industry. I mean, there's a lot of pressure going on to what that actually looks like. But thinking about what it was like the first day you opened is, I think, a piece of how you can scale successfully.
Well, and if you look at it from that, if you look at that day one mentality, I mean, I started an agency from scratch, and that meant something day one. If I would have kept that, it might have kept me a little more lined up. But look at our industry and look at the people that have done really well. You get to that mid-size agency because you've grown, maybe you did an acquisition, maybe you didn't, and you start to get into that some, and I'm not saying all, and this is where I think the differentiation is some of them get into that lifestyle business and they get comfortable and golf becomes a bigger thing or trying their hand at other things. So, but even then, I think, to your point, the industry has changed so dramatically and it's going to continue to change so much that you have to keep that hunger from the top down to continue to stay relevant as things change. That you and I, if we have this conversation again in 3 years, the things we're talking about won't have changed, but everything else around us will have, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah. And yep. So I think let me put a bow on the book. I'm two chapters in. Like I said, I was excited that I got it in under 24 hours from the company you're writing about. I thought that was great. And anyone out there, regardless, I'm getting Dylan, our producer, is sending me notes in the background saying, dude, I want to read this book because it is such a great way to just bring it down to a way where you've said, here's what he means. And you've said it in a way that I can read it and go and apply it. I love things that you can apply. And you don't have to do all 14 principles, right?
Right.
I mean, it would be great.
You're not going to, actually.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Too much.
But go do something, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
And go do something.
I just love what you've done here. Like I was a believer, and I love your passion always, Steve, but this took you to a different level. Now I want you to sign my book. Like that's where I'm at.
I'd be happy to do that. Yeah. And I have to say it's been a wild journey. Foreign rights have been sold for the book in 11 countries. Meaning,
that's crazy. I saw on LinkedIn you posted there was a picture.
I'm literally looking of the book in Russian. I'm looking at it in Japanese, and I'm looking at it in Korean.
Wow!
And those are only three. Those are three big ones: Brazil and a number of smaller countries. And over the next probably 6 months, you know, all of those will be coming out. So, it certainly has. I resonated with people.
Yeah.
And I'm very pleased with that. It was certainly a journey getting it written and out and, you know, thinking through all of this stuff. But I'm proud of the book, and I'm pleased with the feedback I'm getting from people in terms of, it helping them think differently. And that was the ultimate goal of mine.
Well, and I think what you've done is you've created you're a pillar in our industry, and you've written a book that speaks to everyone, but probably somewhere deep inside, you know, you never lost the insurance guy in you, right? So
right. This
all makes perfect sense for our industry. I love it. So I would, I mean, let me take a guess here, since I already know the answer, but I'm guessing I can get the book on Amazon. Where else can I get it?
Well, actually you can get it wherever, certainly Amazon, Barnes and Noble. There are a number of Barnes and Noble stores that are stocking it. So it just depends. In Canada, and I can't remember the, there's a national bookstore chain that I believe has at least three copies in every store.
Like Borders or something like that? Or
no, yeah, it's not Borders. It's, okay. I wish I could remember the name, but it's a large Canadian bookseller.
Okay.
There. And certainly, obviously, online at wherever you get. There is an audio version available, an ebook available, and the physical print book. So all versions.
So go out and get it, and give it to someone as well. Cause like I'm going to buy a copy and get it to my guy, Dylan, cause he's excited about it. And it's got some great, it's just got so much great information in it. Steve, thank you so much.
And let me just say that, you know, if you do buy the book, go to thebezosletters.com. And I've developed a couple of bonus materials just to help you kind of think through the various chapters of the book, and hopefully some practical help on how to apply it.
TheBezosLetters.com. And if you're not, you probably already are, but if you're not out there in LinkedIn world following or connected with Steve Anderson, who is an influencer on LinkedIn, you should, because not only does he give great, great information, but, you know, other ways to get, like you said right there, bonus content, things like that. It's such a great thing. So I'm going to finish the way we always finish, Steve. I'm going to ask the question. It's our time capsule question. We're going to record this next little piece right here. We're going to bury it. Someone's going to dig it up tomorrow in a year. What is Steve Anderson's one big piece of advice for the insurance industry?
Experiment more. And it really does go back. I think experiment is such a key. And that's why that first chapter is called Risk and Growth. I think in order to continue to grow, you have to risk, but smart risk. And that's going to be key to you figuring out, you know, what is your customer going to need when they have their insurance needs in 10 years. And the only way you're going to know that is to experiment. And that means you're going to fail, but it also means you're going to learn and move forward.
That's great advice. Of course it is, because it's Steve Anderson. He's my guy. And you got other things coming up this month. I think January we're getting an excerpt in a magazine. What are we doing?
Yeah, there's a little magazine called IA Magazine, which is the independent agent magazine of the National
Heard of
Big
it a couple
Eye
times.
is running an excerpt of the book. So I'm very happy about that too. So you actually, If you haven't bought the book, get the magazine. You can read an excerpt of the first couple chapters to get a sense for what the book might be. And I actually hope you buy it and enjoy it. And if you do, let me know. Go to thebezosletters.com. You can send me an email at steve@thebezosletters. And I'd love to hear what you think and what you're learning and how you're applying it.
And we just touched the surface of those things. We only even really talked about four of the 14. There's so much great information. Steve, once again, I am so appreciative. Thank you so much for coming on. I hope we can do it again soon. Good luck with all of, you know, continued success. It's just an amazing thing that you're doing. I mean, I'm not going to read it in Russian, but just to see it come across my LinkedIn in Russian was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. I have to admit, it was pretty cool.
Thank you so much for being on, Steve.
Great to be here with you. I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We will see you next week. Don't forget to subscribe, follow me on LinkedIn, and share my posts with other people to get this podcast out to the masses. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the Vertafore Insurance Podcast, and tune in next Thursday for a brand new episode. You can find more episodes at vertafore.com under the Resources tab, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, and if you enjoyed this episode, share it on social and spread the word. Don't forget to join in on the conversation and recommend future guests by messaging us at Vertafore.